morning, ladies and gentlemen, honorable members, honorable Detroit, honorable Maria, what's happening? Good morning to both of you. Good morning, honorable members, honorable Nyakeme and honorable Mohale. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we are proceeding with the meeting for today. We did have a slight problem in terms of the knowledge of the actual venue because there are two committee rooms too. I know there's a delegation that I've been waiting with at committee room two, the other committee room two, somewhere else. And therefore, that is part of why we were actually late, but I realized that most were already there, so that we dislocated some committee rooms at some point. Okay, good morning to all of you. I'll just outline the agenda, and then we will be able to proceed. On the agenda, we've got two items today, and we've got two departments that are going to lead us to the presentation so that we're able to discuss the matter. The very first briefing, it will be a briefing by the National Treasury on the financial status and performance of all provincial departments put under administration by the National Cabinet. We will come back to that before they present to just give a background in terms of what informs this meeting and what's our long-term intention on that. The second briefing is on the same matter. It will be the briefing by the Department of Public Service and Administration on the status of administration, that is administrative management of all provincial departments put under administration by the National Cabinet. Okay, so those are the two matters that we're going to focus on today from both departments. I'll take you through some apologies. I have looked into the apologies and I think it's still correct, and therefore I'm very confident that we're proceeding with the meeting also in the light that both departments are here and we did receive their presentation in advance, and we appreciate that. Though one of the departments was slightly late, but nonetheless we managed to actually deal with the documents yesterday night. We have the apology from the acting minister, Mildred. Acting Minister Mildred Oliphant, who is engaged with government businesses. Deputy Minister Ayanda Rodlo, who is also engaged with business government. As you know, normally the ones are badly situated because it's a cabinet day or cabinet committees. But we do manage to sort of negotiate them out of cabinet. But today, they definitely had to deal with matters. They did explain to me and outlined what was there discussed, and therefore they had to be part of those meetings. We have the apology from Honorable Williams, who is not well. Honorable Bosheko, who is on oversight visit. Honorable Maluleka, also on oversight. And Honorable Tombe attending a strategic session for another committee. As we know, we do share members with other committees. So at this point in time, other members are actually engaged in other committees. As I indicated, the members that are here is Honorable Detoit, Honorable Mare, Honorable Mohali, Honorable Nyakembe, and Honorable Manana, myself, Mului Muruka. We're then proceeding. I would like to indicate that from the department, from the National Treasury, we have Mr. Kenneth Brown, who is the DDG Intergovernmental, who will be leading the delegation. I will allow Kenneth to actually introduce the entire delegation once he will be starting and once he will be proceeding with the presentation. From the DPSA, we do have the DG who is present here, Mr. Mashwashe Jipufa, who's part of who's leading his delegation, who will be able to actually indicate to us the proceedings and including the entire delegation that is with him. On that note, honourable members, ladies and gentlemen, we need to indicate that as part of the entire oversight of administrative issues, matters such as the ones that are on the agenda today are the issues that we focus on as the committee. We will be moving to also our oversight meeting where we do oversight as the committee. And part of an oversight, like we did indicate, we are tasked with an overarching task of evaluating oversight in terms of Section 195 of the Constitution, which therefore has a broader mandate. We therefore have to ensure that we do a collaboration in instances where we deal with oversight. I will just give an example that while we'll be getting this presentation, interrogating this aspect, it will be important for the committee to also go to the province to have a touch and a feel on the issues that we're discussing about, so that we are able to assess and see if these presentations and the discussions and the progress, if there will be a sufficient progress given in this meeting, are actually in a true sense as they are presented. So part of what we'll be doing, like we talk about collaboration, clustering, coming together, you know, sharing of information, a better way of working while we bring together institutions. We'll be working with the Public Service Commission, with the Auditor General, with other committees concerned on this matter, focusing on also aspects such as areas that are identified by government, on the five main objectives of government. We'll be focusing on education or health. We're still discussing and negotiating with Parliament which one do they allow us, but we have already submitted a motivation. We will be then blending into the province, working with also the provincial legislature committees. They normally have the committees, they call them the Premier's Oversight Committees. We'll be working with that committee. But the approach that we're going to take, it's not an approach where we go there, we ask questions, and we come back. We do have various reports from various institutions, public savings, for instance, and also maybe the DPSA and National Treasury and other Auditor General, which we are going to send in advance to indicate to the province these are the issues, and then we would require the researchers to go there, make sure that they collate all the information that constitute part of the response. Once we go and sit there, we are sitting in a form of responding to the entire community around how those matters are being dealt with, so that we're able to evaluate while we do our oversight. Even the communities are able to evaluate whether we are able to actually accede to the demands that are put forward in a collaborated manner. Along that brief, ladies and gentlemen and honorable members, I would like to allow the National Treasury to take us through the briefing on the financial status and performance of all provincial departments put under administration by the National Cabinet. We would know that not only a particular province, but it's various provinces. And therefore, let's allow National Treasury to take us through. Over to you, Mr. Brown.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and members of the committee. I'm accompanied here by my colleague here from Parliament, Temegile Plaike. Maybe let me just get straight to it. This is just a recap. Cabinet resolved to intervene in the Eastern Cape Department of Education last year, and the main reasons for that was the management of personnel and the issues around post-provisioning in education. Then it was also the issue around the poor supply chain on learner-teacher support material. And then it was a relative failure on the National School Nutrition Program and the general management of the school infrastructure program. Then in the case of Limpopo, as a matter of background, Cabinet implemented Section 105 departments, the Treasury, Education, Health, Public Works, Roads, and Transport. Basically, this 1B is a direct intervention where the National Executive basically is taking over the operational affairs of those respective departments. And as we all know, the HODs are appointed by the Premier, so there's a bit of a separation between the role of an HOD and accounting officer. And in the main, the role responsibility of accounting officer has been taken over there. We are aware that at the time, the province had accumulated unauthorized expenditure to the tune of 2.7 billion. The province at the time projected to overspend its budget by close to 2 billion rand. At the time, right? And now, despite any more numerous attempts from the Treasury to assist the department, the Treasury in particular in the province, to solve the problem, this is not successful. Now, we all know it's old news now that it had a cash flow problem by October. And based on all of that and the drain that all of that had on the finances of the province, the National Cabinet took it a decision to intervene basically in the province there. Then in the case of the Free State, there was two departments that basically had problems. The one was the Department of Police, Roads and Transport, where they went into a procurement of 23 roads there and found themselves actually on the difficult end. Firstly, because the process that they followed to procure those roads was flawed, and then secondly, they found it difficult to actually then get themselves out of the management of those specific roads there. Then the Treasury there did not, given the failure in the Department of Public Works, Roads and Transport, it was deemed that the Treasury did not fulfill its responsibilities as it relates to the PUFMA. And based on that, the Cabinet took a decision to intervene in terms of Section 1A. Now, in terms of 1A, a directive was now issued to the province to fix those two departments there. In terms of Gauteng, this was not a Section 100 agreement intervention. It was more a Section 18 of the PFMA intervention by the Provincial Treasury on the Department of Health there to solve the problems faced by the Department of Health. But at the same time, the Minister of Finance and the MEC for Finance entered into another agreement to deal with the Gauteng Shared Services Center, as we know it, and there was an issue around the administrative precinct that the province was going to be building. So that was in addition to the health part there. Now, the current financial status of the Eastern Cape, if we now turn to slide number 6, what we see is quite a bit of a turnaround in the finances of the province. Firstly, overspending in personnel is to the order of 353 million compared to quite the large sums in previous years. If we look at capital assets, there's an underspending of about 500 million there. Now, this is a remarkable improvement compared to the previous year where the province actually spent quite less or underspent quite a bigger chunk of that there. So if you look at the budget outcome improved from an overspending of 1.9% from 2.9 to about 1.9% there, and what we see is a cross subsidization where the part of the capital budget funding is used to subsidize compensation of employees there, but there is a general trust of improvement there. Now, the focus area now is to actually stabilize personnel, because personnel is indeed a drain on the finances of the Department of Education, basically there. I'll talk to that a bit later on. But then the finance section of the department has been stabilized by the deployment of National Treasury and Provincial Treasury officials to the following functions: to support the CFO there, to deal with issues around supply chain, risk and internal control, and to assist in internal audit. So at the face of it, on the financial side, we start to see quite tangible improvements coming through. A project plan has been finalized by the DPSA, the Department of Basic Education, and the Treasury, and the Provincial Treasury, and the Department, and we are now implementing that project plan. The DPSA will talk in its presentation around its personal kind of cleanup and what's going to happen there. But the next phase that the Department of Basic Education is going to be undertaking in the province is physically to count the learners within the system, and actually the educators basically as well. So we're going to have quite a bit of a payroll audit as well to just make sure that the amount of teachers that we indeed have on the system are the teachers that need to be there at the same time. And we expect that this will lead to quite a bit of substantial savings. Now, there have been numerous turnaround plans that have been drafted basically, but what we start to see there's better coordination coming through this, through this, and what the Department of Basic Education is starting to look at is to say, how do you strengthen the district, because ultimately the district is fairly close to the school through its circuit at the end of the day. So there is a drive to strengthen the districts. In the case of the Free State, it underspent its budget. There is also a bit of a turnaround there. It underspent its budget by 1.7% in 2011-12, compared to 3.8% in the previous year. We've done quite a detailed capacity assessment of the Treasury. There, we know where the gaps are, and we are now starting to deal with those specific gaps within the Treasury. Cost containment measures are being implemented in the province, basically just to make sure that funding can be channeled into key kind of areas of spending that have got quite a bit of an impact on the people, especially the poor, basically on the ground. We have filled critical positions in the Treasury there. There is one risk, though, the redeployment of some people, because what now happens is where there's gaps in other departments, we tend to move then people into those other departments instead of solving the problems of those specific departments. So there is an element of that could still pose a risk for the Treasury. We are managing that there. In the Department of Roads and Transport, on slide number 9, it has basically underspent its budget by 124 million. We have established a technical advisory team that supports the department there, and we are dealing with the closure of the 23 roads that where we had problems there. So we're using SANRAL and the DBSA to finalize those roads there. We have conducted a forensic investigation on what has transpired in the 23 roads, and we are now looking into that. In the case of Gauteng health, as members will know, I mean, health is quite a sophisticated, I would say, industry in government, actually, basically to run, and especially Gauteng has got quite a huge health system. I mean, to the tune of over 23 billion rand there. And we are now starting to say, you know, how do we turn around the entire health department there, look at its management structure, and see how we can actually support it, basically there. We have actually stabilized a bit the health. We still got a long way to go, but we have stabilized the system there. We're seeing an over expenditure more on the personnel side of 728 million. We see an overspending on goods and services on 590 million. If members can remember, there was quite a bit of an overhang of previous years, and what has happened now in that financial year, there's quite a bit of an acceleration in the payment of accruals of previous years, and hence the overspending that we start to see of 590 going in there, and the financial statements for 2011-12 reflect an accumulated unauthorized expenditure of 3.6 billion, and the Treasury in the province is putting measures in place to start to deal with that 3.6 billion. We have now for this financial year set aside 1.5 billion. The Treasury has set aside in the province to settle all of the health accruals there. So the payments for medicines taking place, the debt with the National Health Laboratory Services is basically being settled now, and we are confident that in the next 2 to 3 months, a lot of the backlogs that were there would really be settled at the end of the day there. And the province, the health department is putting austerity measures in place to make sure that they can save every cent without compromising the delivery of services there. But at the same time, the province as a whole is also looking at how to save further to bolster health. That we are confident that with further support to the department, that we will see quite a bit of a huge turnaround in that department. So part of the measures that we've put in place, members will know, health like education is quite a decentralized system, and a lot of the authority to hire has been decentralized, basically, as well, delegated to facilities in the case of health. So the management of those delegations for hiring have been reviewed, and there's a system in place to make sure that you know, people don't hire without having a proper budget for that in place. So there's quite a bit of a coordination taking place. But members should also remember there's a transition in health where we're moving from where we had the Gauteng Shared Services Center that did quite a bit of the procurement and all of that. So a lot of those functions are shifting into the departments, basically. So at the same time, the capability of those departments to manage that is basically being strengthened. So we've got procedures that we're putting in place to just make sure that those departments adhere to the prescripts for supply chain. So there is a working group that meets regularly to make sure that that all of these measures that are put in place indeed are implemented. The department has got quite a bit of now a grip on where the fault lines are and how to start to fix a bit of that. In the case of Limpopo, what is important here is if a treasury, and this is very important, if a treasury collapses in a province, the entire system would basically not work properly. It's slide number 12. The entire system will not work quite properly there. So we're putting quite a bit all of our effort in the treasury to make sure that the treasury is in a position to exercise its responsibilities as given to it by what is the constitution and the PFMA. So what we have is we've got the administrator who is basically running the treasury, and we've placed key personnel from national to deal with asset and liability management, to deal with the budget preparation process, and to deal with the corporate services measures matters, and also to support the Office of the Accountant General in the provincial treasury to deal with that. And we're starting to see quite a bit of positive things actually coming out there. So, in effect, the province ended in a positive cash situation of about 231 million. The liquidity problem that the province experienced has fairly been solved now. The payments to suppliers is normalizing there. In the draft financial statements, what we are seeing is there are still outstanding payments of about 1.1 billion. We have placed adverts in the newspapers in the Popo, and we have used the radio stations there to ask all suppliers in the province if they still need to be paid. They must actually bring all of the information that's needed so that we can accelerate and deal with quite a bit of the payments. Basically, a big chunk of the 1.1 billion that we see there is there may be documents here not properly coming from suppliers to deal with that. So we are fairly confident that in the next 3 to 4 months, even that would be sorted out there. What we have introduced in the province was a proper asset and liability management system there. So one of the guys that we've put in the treasury has, for example, indicated to all of the departments the money that they will be receiving for the year, month by month. So they will know on the 15th we're going to be getting this tranche of money. On the 30th we'll be getting this tranche of money. So they know for the whole year the amount of money that they will be getting. Right? And they need to now plan their payment systems in such a way that they align it basically to those amounts. Right? And what we've indicated to departments there is, should there be a, normally you must remember, members, these are forecasts, for example. So you could have, low spending, you could have high spending. Where there's high spending and they need to pay larger bills than what we've given them, they need to alert the treasury quite swiftly to be able to deal with that. So we start to see that relationship of asset management between the treasury and the department actually starting to work quite well there. We have tabled a credible budget. If members last year the overspending in, for example, education was predominantly in personnel, right, and in education personnel. So what we've said is said, look here, if the people are there and they need to be paid, why don't you just budget for them? Then not to budget for them and create an overspending. So we have fixed the education and health budget for that matter, as it relates to personnel. And we have indicated to the Treasury as well as those departments to monitor the spending on personnel quite accurately, so that we just make sure that we don't find ourselves in a precarious position at the end of the financial year. In addition to that, we have allocated in the Treasury, in the provincial Treasury. Now this is the province's money. National government didn't give a cent to the province, and I want to make that clear. Right? So this is just reorganizing what needs to happen in the province with its own money. So it has set aside about 128 million to assist both the Department of Education and Health in the personnel numbers audit, and so the DPSA part of that will be able to source part of that money to support those departments to be able to drive that personnel turnaround, the audit for learner numbers, etc. So funding has been set aside basically to deal with that. At the same time, the province generates about 2.5% of its own revenue through whether it's the gambling board, whether it's through the Department of Transport Motor Vehicle License Fees, etc. So we are also looking at a strategy to say, how do you also enhance your own revenue to be able to meet your obligations? So measures are in place to deal with that there. And then there's a detailed plan has been developed to capacitate the budget planning and cash management functions within the Treasury. Must remember, we've divided this intervention into phases. The first phase was to stabilize the situation. Now we're entering a phase where we are building the capacity of the Treasury to run these things on their own now. So that if the guy from cash management or asset and liability management leaves, the people must be there to be able to run the system. So we are at the recovery, I would say. Now we've finalized the project plan that says now we are going to get into a phase of embedding best practice, basically. Then the phase thereafter would be how do we then exit out of the system and leave quite a bit of a solid administration in the Treasury actually going there. The recruitment of the head of the Department of the Treasury is currently underway, and as well as the critical other positions within the provincial Treasury, that is underway. The advert went out, I think, 2 or 3 weeks ago for this, and the process of filling the position is underway. Now, what is important, if the Treasury functions properly, and you'll see with the next slide, the fault lines in a number of those departments has got to do with financial management in there, which means the Treasury, because it was weakened, those departments basically there, that's where we had the first line there. So if we fix, we are confident that if we fix the Treasury, the positive spin-offs would flow into the other departments there. Now if you look at, or we already see an improvement on slide 13, right? Compensation of employees, if my memory serves me correctly, in the year prior to this financial year, overspending was to the order of about 700 million. And a big chunk of the accumulated unauthorized expenditure in education was because of overspending in personnel. Now we only see an overspending of 122 million. And given the fact that we have tabled a budget now, which is actually increasing compensation of employees, that to make sure that we meet our obligations in terms of that, we are confident that this department will be able to meet quite a bit of its obligations as it relates to that. The underspending on goods and services, the 160 million, part of that has been the problem with the learner support material that was not delivered on time, but those textbooks should be delivered now in June. The orders have been placed, and all of that has actually been solved. And if we look at it compared to the previous year, overspending is 0.4% of their budget. In the previous year, it was 2.6% of their budget. So we're starting to see that turnaround in real numbers coming through there. So I've touched on the education, on the issues around verification of learners and educators there. The personnel structure, I've spoken about that. Now I'm coming to financial and budget management within the Department of Education. So to say the linkage between, because part of the responsibilities of a treasury is to support all of the spending agencies to make sure that on the financial management side, those things are in place there. So we are now
now that the treasury is stabilizing, we are now working closely with the departments to stabilize issues relating to financial management, whether it's supply chain, procurement, contract management, etc. Now, even on the issues around contract management and in the treasury, the provincial Exco, I think it's 2 weeks ago, approved phase three of the infrastructure delivery improvement program, which is actually modernizing the entire infrastructure delivery system, and so procurement, how to deal with basically the procurement of schools, clinics, roads, etc. So we're embedding quite a bit of a system. This system we have piloted in the Western Cape 2 years ago. It's functioning actually flawless in the Western Cape. So we are now transporting it to the COPO. The Exco has agreed to it, and we are confident that with that we will be able to modernize infrastructure delivery in the province there. On the health side, I've spoken about compensation of employees and the work that we will be doing, and we can see here the overspending in health, and we are putting HR measures in place to be able to deal with that. Now you see an underspending of over 334 million in goods and services. That in the main has got to do with the measures that have been put in place to verify payments and all of that. So a lot of the dubious claims have actually been weeded out of the system, and that's the reason why we see quite a bit of that. A worrying factor has been the underspending in capital, but with the infrastructure intervention support that we are giving, we're confident that they will be able to deal with that. Again, in health, similar like in education, it is dealing with the PERSAL stuff. The DBSA will talk about it. It's also embedding supply chain management systems and everything that is related to financial management in there. We are moving basically in there. On pharmaceuticals, this part was outsourced. Now the department will be running it basically on its own. In Mpumalanga, for example, USAID assisted the Department of Health there to manage its from pharmaceutical depots in there. And there's quite a bit of a huge success out of there. So the Department of Health nationally is also now working with what has happened in Mpumalanga to see whether they can shift that kind of model into Limpopo, basically to basically deal with that. But in the main, in health, and it is not only in Limpopo, it will be across all health departments. Health, you need to deal with HR management. If you don't have a strong HR unit in health, like in education, to really deal with it, you know, because that's your largest cost driver. And a lot of the provinces and treasuries understand now that you need to strengthen that part so that you just make sure that your costs as it relates to that don't balloon. In the Department of Public Works, in fact, here we had quite a bit of a strong hand to really make sure that the risks for the province are minimized. The underspending is about 50 million on page 17. And these are the issues and that we are now working at. We're reviewing quite a bit of the leases and all of the rentals for the properties in the province there. And then there is the issue around movable assets, really making sure that we know where all the assets are. That process is underway there. And to reorganize the department actually to be able to execute its responsibility. Now, this is the public works department. Part of the infrastructure delivery improvement program that we are putting in is also looking at how this department needs to be reorganized and to be able to do its work and support the other departments there. And again, if you look at the last bullet and the three sub-bullets, those are treasury functions in a department, which is related to if your treasury is weak, this will be in a spending agency, not be in place. So we are working quite closely with that. In the Department of Roads and Transport, this is what we see the situation to be. They're underspending their budget by 224 million. Yeah. And yeah, it's basically putting measures in place, just cost containment, where people were just traveling and there was no controls in place. That's just those mundane kind of interventions that actually has translated in the savings that we actually start to see coming through there. So in the Department of Transport, again, we're looking at the organizational structure, going through each and every position and trying to basically to fix it. There. But at the same time, there are agencies that are reporting to this department. Where you've got there's GAL, the airports company that's running Polokwane Airport, and then you've got the roads agency Limpopo that's also dealing with that. So we are now starting to look at whether there's a need to unbundle some of them, and how, if so, how do we go about that. So we're still a bit far away from that, but we are looking at how those agencies need to be managed quite closely. Now, a big chunk of this department, if one looks back and you look at the payment for capital assets, about 500 million is budget. The 1.3, 1.4 billion that you see there, that is the transfer that will take place to either GAL or to the roads agency Limpopo. It's a big chunk. So in total, there's about 1.8 billion that's available for either maintenance or for big road rehabilitation at the end of the day. So it is like if you don't fix that part, a big chunk of the funding would actually be lost there. So we are now looking at how we're going to deal with that. Honourable Chair, I hope I've covered everything that was required from the Treasury, and with that I'll end there. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much for the presentation, National Treasury. I believe we have actually covered a lot. Would still interrogate some aspects of the presentation. The honourable members' hands are up. Okay, in that order: Honourable Mohale, Honourable Nyakembe, Honourable De Deutsch, Honourable Mare, and you. Yes. Uh huh. Uh
huh.
Oh, that's a proposal. What are you on the issue of the proposal?
Yes, I'm on the proposal, Chair. Because if you listen carefully to the presentation, there are areas that overlap to the Department of Public Safety and Administration.
Mm.
So in order for us not to ask questions of a presentation that has not already presented, it's better than if we also get the presentation from Public Service Administration. Because I believe we have noted areas that we need to engage National Treasury on in terms of their presentation. So it will make this process to run very smooth, Shepherd.
Okay, so you're seconding the proposal. Honourable members,
yes,
I would also,
Chair,
suggest that we just proceed, that we have also noticed areas of commonality in the presentation. I know it might be a little bit a lot. What I can propose at this point in time, if members want Treasury to maybe emphasize something from the presentation, something was not clear, you wanted to actually be explained, that I can take, but if it's questions, then let's take questions jointly. Are there areas of emphasis? You know, for an example, I would really want to find out about the cause of the collapse, you know, of Treasury, in particularly Limpopo. If the whole Treasury collapses, you know, the provincial, but if you look at it, it does have administrative implications as well. So I would actually defer my question after the presentation. Can I then request the Department of Public Safety and Administration to proceed with the presentation?
Honourable Chair, thank you very much. Honourable members of the Portfolio Committee, I'm joined by the Deputy Director General responsible for Service Delivery and Organizational Transformation in DPSA. She's got a team as well from her section, Johan, Siabonga, and Veronica, and also from the Monitoring and Evaluation section, Lady Lebosch, and supported by a team from the Ministry. But without wasting any time, I'll ask Colette Clark, who's the DDG for Service Delivery and Organizational Transformation, to take us through the presentation.
Thank you. Thank you very much, honourable members. I will start immediately from slide number 7, because Treasury has already covered the background in terms of the cabinet decisions. So in the interest of time, we'll be over roasting the walnut if I, raise exactly the same issues. So slide number 7 is just reiterating what Treasury has indicated in terms of the intention of Section 101A and 1B. So we are fully intervening in terms of Section 101B, and we are just providing continuous assistance in terms of the directive, as Treasury had indicated, to Free State and to Gauteng. And that is the difference between the nature of the interventions. That being said, just in terms of the methodology of the intervention from the side of public service and administration, we have identified 5 phases with rough timelines in terms of what needs to be done. I need to just flag to you that the most intensive, labor-intensive part is the diagnostics. And the diagnostic tool that we have, which is called the organizational functionality analysis, does a functionality analysis of every single aspect of those particular departments, including the assistance from Treasury around the financial diagnostics, which clearly is their particular competency. But from all the other aspects of administration of governance, our particular organizational functionality assessment tool then does the diagnostics. From the diagnostics, we make particular recommendations in terms of what should be the strategy in relation to the recovery plans in the areas of HR, in the areas of cases, discipline, in the areas of higher level cases where there may be instances of corruption, as well as data and ITC systems. So it's about systems, it's about processes, it's about the people, and it's about the technology that needs to be in place to address the gaps that we have identified from the toolkit. What the toolkit also does in terms of the diagnostic phase is indicate the aspects of compliance. And in many instances, as highlighted by the Auditor General, there have been areas of non-compliance, and clearly we flag to those particular departments what should be the recovery plans to start addressing the aspect of non-compliance in particular areas. So where we are at in terms of DPSA, we are only on phase 2, as I've indicated, because the diagnostic process is extremely labor-intensive. That being said, in terms of both the provinces, that's Limpopo and Eastern Cape, by and large, from where Treasury sits, the cash and the budget management issues, there have been issues about overruns, and clearly Treasury has addressed the mechanisms that they have been putting in place to deal with the overruns. There also are mechanisms to deal with any identified corruption cases, and those have been dealt with all the agencies that are responsible for assisting with investigations that are linked to corruption. Clearly, the aspect of leadership, capacity and management, there has been the cursory diagnostics about the ineffective oversight, the lack of direction, the lack of strategic leadership in those particular 5 departments, as well as the Eastern Cape Department of Education, and therefore a real focus on how do you then lift the ante from an operational leadership functionality level to that of a strategic leadership level. The organizational arrangements, this is where the problem starts. In many instances, the organizational structures are incorrectly configured, they are bloated, there isn't a focus on delivery of core business, there's too much of a focus on corporate services, and that is where our own aspects of the personal cleanup kicks in. Because for us, the service delivery model of the mandate of the department and what they have to deliver on and what they are supposed to be driving determines how they need to be structured. So there's a great emphasis on revisiting the organizational arrangements, and it's also part of the personal cleanup. The weaknesses that we've also identified are around the business process quality management, the aspect of the functioning of key processes. Clearly, Treasury has also spoken to the aspect of poor contract management, specifically in the procurement space, as well as very poor project management. And those are the areas that clearly would have to be addressed in order for there to be a functionality at an acceptable standard level for the functionality of those particular departments. The data integrity, the personal system, the personal cleanup started way before the actual announcement of the intervention, the Section 100 intervention. And it has started to yield. You will see later on in the slide that for provincial treasury, there has been a decline in the number of vacancies, not necessarily because they've been filled, but because of the personnel cleanup, because what we've indicated to those five departments as part of the personnel cleanup, where those vacancies are unfunded, they have to be abolished. And the minute they're abolished, then they're no longer vacancies, and clearly you start getting a much cleaner picture on the personnel system in relation to what are the bona fide vacancies, and therefore they can be filled. Now, the difference between ourselves and Treasury, you will see notably that Treasury, it's easy for them to extract data and give you the performance per department because of the relationship between an existing national treasury and a provincial national treasury in being able to get that particular data, and also the constitutional oversight in relation to the controls, the monitoring, and dictating the marching orders to provincial treasuries as to what has been expected. For us as DPSA, in terms of the legislative institutional arrangement, the Premier's office is the port of call that we have to rely on in relation to the coordination of the administrative functions that have been conferred on the Minister for Public Service and Administration. So by and large, it is a collaborative relationship between ourselves and the Premier's office. And we can say for Limpopo, we are very happy that there has been a very, very collaborative arrangement between ourselves and the Premier's office in trying to deal with the challenges that have been raised thus far. For the Free State and Gauteng, we haven't got any formal request in terms of Section 101A in terms of the director. But that being said, we still have parallel processes in terms of the identified organizational functionality assessment tool that have been prioritized for those particular departments. And clearly from DPSA side, in terms of our own capacity to be in four provinces at one time, we had to prioritize in terms of Limpopo as well as the Eastern Cape. And therefore, it is a peripheral support that we are currently giving to the aspect of the three identified Free State departments as well as health. Now, for health, we are working collaboratively with the National Department of Health, starting with the genetic structures for the health sector, because the Minister for Health is taking that as an extremely important project, because that will then assist with the functionality and the service delivery model of our health needs to be structured and our health then needs to function. And we are on board in terms of that particular process, and clearly it would assist with the identified problems that would be in the aspect of administration. But for the health in Gauteng, the bulk of the problems that had been raised are around the National Treasury competency, which I think cogently has been addressed by our colleague from Treasury. But the quality assurance in terms of compliance with the Public Service and Act as well as the regulations relating to the organizational development function, that is part of, as I've indicated, the normal oversight activities, and we're integrally involved in those identified departments because they are dealing with the aspects of, does that department have a service delivery model? Does it have service delivery improvement plans? Does it have service standards? Does it have business processes in place and so forth? Those are part of our organizational functionality assessments, and we are currently busy with those particular departments. So as our normal oversight function, they are addressing the aspects that had been raised in the directive for those departments that are in Section 101A. Now, for the institutional arrangements for the Eastern Cape and Limpopo from the lens of public administration, the arrangements are not the same. We have Siyabonga Ntsimang, who's heading the Eastern Cape intervention, working directly with the education team and the identified five ministers, and they are in the embryonic stages of finalizing the nature of how they would be intervening in the education department. For Limpopo, there have been administrators that have been appointed to oversee the six task teams that are responsible. This is the Eastern Cape, but for the Limpopo, for the five departments, the political leadership is provided by the Minister of Finance. It's supported by the Minister of Health, Transport, Public Works and Justice, and Minister for Public Service and Administration. And we've got administrators that have been appointed for the five affected departments. So the institutional arrangements clearly are different. So our role from the DPSA side is determined by the administrative arrangements for Limpopo as well as for the Eastern Cape. Now, just in terms of the general progress, clearly the stabilization phase has been well advanced, and as Treasury has indicated, the financial stability definitely has been achieved, and they spoke to that in terms of the reduction of the compensation budget. The recovery phase for both ourselves as well as Treasury is about how do you work with officials in those affected departments to go back to basics in terms of diagnosing what the causal factors are in terms of our own diagnostic functionality assessment tool, and then approaching all the governance and the systemic issues and working with those particular departments to put plans in place as to how they need to be rectifying them. And as I earlier indicated, our own DPSA organizational functionality assessment tool deals with all the aspects of what is required for the administration of a department and what are the checkpoints, and for us it's checking whether they're there and whether they're not there, and the degree of implementation, and therefore then aiding the recovery plan. We've also worked from the Auditor General's findings, and these are the findings not necessarily only for the five departments, it's generically for the province of Limpopo. And the key focus areas from the AG, there was a serious problem around human resources planning and organization, where you're finding that the HR plans that they were supposed to put in place, there were serious gaps and not aligned. So in 57% of instances, they were not aligned. And you would then appreciate that if they're not aligned, it has serious implications for how HR planning takes place, for the recruitment of employees, for the creation of posts, and for the filling of posts in the MTF. And that is one of the issues within the HR task team that has been addressed. I must say for Limpopo, it's only one department that had the organizational structure not aligned, so you see the 14%. There was a split between the Department of Health and Department of Social Development, and there wasn't an alignment of the new strategic plan for the separation of those in the year 2010-2011. So you see that the AG's report speaks to that. It was just a 14% non-compliance, which just translates to one department. The management of vacancies, vacant positions for more than 12 months, the AG indicated there was an 86% instance where departments had vacancies for more than 12 months. The appointment process, mailing posts that had not been advertised, there was a 14% instance of that. Verification checks not performed in the appointment process, 29% of that. Performance bonuses incorrectly calculated, there was a 57% instance of that. Acting positions, employees acting for more than 12 months, there was a 71% instance where that was happening in vacant promotional posts. Then the management of leave, overtime, and suspension, clearly where the procedures were not followed, the AG indicated there was a 57% instance in that particular case. And the capacity of key personnel, that's staff being appointed without the necessary qualifications or competencies for the positions, 43% of instances where that happened. Now, that being said, if one is looking at the situational analysis of the quality of information that has been put on the PERSAL system and clearly the fields that are required to be maintained and they have not been maintained, then clearly the domino effect is that you can't get itinerary reports for any planning if the data has not been put onto the PERSAL system. So there's serious inaccuracies in terms of the capturing of crucial information, and inevitably that impacts on the HR planning or any other further planning, resource planning, and the decision-making that has been required. Clearly a high vacancy rate compromising the control environment, and there's a lack of segregation of duties and delegations. We do have a project in DPSA where we are assisting departments with the standardized generic delegations and the principles of delegations that have to be implemented in terms of the separation of duties, separation of powers, and also those that have been delegated to the EA and delegated to the AO, because that is where the confusion comes in with regards to the final decision making. The unfunded vacancies that are captured on PERSAL, as I've indicated to you, you will see in the instance of Provincial Treasury, where there's been a cleaning of the PERSAL system, all those unfunded vacancies disappear, and then you get a much more favorable report in terms of the state of the vacancies. Treasury spoke to the issue of the consistent historical over-expenditure and compensation within the MTF, and they have addressed that in terms of their measures. Well, the large vacancies, we've raised that. But the management and the administrative controls that are not implemented to ensure the identified weaknesses. Now, clearly, that points to a lack of understandable competencies around the leadership of the individuals that are supposed to have an oversight role in relation to these particular functions. Just as a matter of indication, for the three periods that are indicated here for October, December, and March 2012, that's a period of one per quarter, you will see provincial treasury in October 2011 as an example. The average period in months that the posts have been vacant, it's 15 months. In December, the average was 16 months, and by March, you're starting to see a reduction in the amount of months, so they're starting to fill posts. But what is interesting is that for public works, the average is very, very small, and it's much lower than most of the departments that you would get nationally. You've only got an average of 4 months wait for the filling of posts in the Department of Public Works. Now, in terms of our own personal cleanup projects, as we've indicated, the organizational functionality assessment process where we've assessed where the problems are is assisting where the focus areas need to be on the personnel cleanup, which is a separate project which is part of Outcome 12, and that is really showing good progress. And as we've indicated, you will see for provincial treasury, there has been a decline in the vacancies by virtue of cleaning up the unfunded vacancies on the system. But also there has been instances where we've requested a review of appointments to determine whether they're in line with the Public Service Act and regulations. And the process varies from complete to well advanced from department to department, because there have been queries in relation to the processes as to how people were recruited, whether the posts were advertised, whether they met the requirements, whether the post even exists, whether they qualify for the post or the organizational structure and so forth. Because the organizational functionality assessment toolkit will ask all those particular questions for the purposes of recruitment and filling of posts. In terms of the performance management system, clearly there's been a verification process to ensure whether there's an alignment between the key performance areas and the key result areas of SMS members, and whether they have signed their performance agreements. Where they haven't signed their performance agreements, which is a legal requirement by the 31st of May, those have been corrected and where they have been discovered. But also, the financial disclosure of senior management hasn't happened. That has been completed because it's been a priority. Because in order to do investigations to know whether there have been interest of SMS members in procurement procedures, you need to know what they've declared on their financial disclosure to link them, during the particular investigation. So that was a priority. As well as the cases of interest in private companies, the financial disclosures clearly will tell us whether on the Cipro, I can't remember the new name, the Cipro, on the database, in terms of the registration of private companies, as well as whether the disclosure on the financial disclosure are linked, there has been some sort of forensic analysis in relation to those particular instances. The management of disciplinary cases, it varies according to the rate of progress. Now, there's two instances here. There are backlog cases that have been given to the investigation teams from the intervention, as well as the new emerging cases that are emerging out of the diagnostics and the requests from outside agencies like the NPA to assist. So if you're looking in terms of the phases for the disciplinary cases, we've got the following phases. We've the detection of the irregularity. If it is beyond the competency of the public administration and it borders on broader, much larger corruption, then that is forwarded to the NPA to do the assessment in relation to whether there's need for further criminal investigations in those particular cases. Where there isn't a necessity for that, then the normal administrative disciplinary prosecution, which is the competency of the employer, then takes place, which is not necessarily dependent on the outcome of the criminal case. So there's two separate aspects. Because generally where there are criminal cases, they may actually not necessarily involve public servants themselves. They may be involving people outside the purview of the role of public service officials, and therefore the NPA has to make that particular assessment. Phase three, clearly it's the scrutiny of the cases to establish whether there is a prima facie case, and then the normal aspect of going through the disciplinary procedures. And DPSA has a team that is assisting, with the prosecution and the presiding over these particular cases. And clearly the appeals are normally dealt with. If it's an SMS, there is no appeal process. If the person is dismissed, they are dismissed, and they've got to use the normal court procedures to deal with the appeal. But if it's for any employee below SMS level, they can appeal to the executive authority when the case has been concluded. Just to give you in terms of the case list at this particular point in time for the purposes of the intervention, the number of cases in education thus far are 27, and this is only specifically for Limpopo, with 9 of these cases still requiring investigations, 5 of them requiring hearings, and 13 of them already having been finalized along the phases that have been indicated. For roads and transport, those are the numbers health. Now, there's an interesting category there where you've got health providers. There are 51 health providers. Now, clearly, they're not employees of the state. And hence the assistance of the NPA comes in the sense that where there are instances that clearly there has been a deviation or from the own assessment, there needs to be further investigation in terms of the concerns from the internal investigators. These are handed over for external investigations and possibly criminal charges where the need arises. For Treasury, what Treasury had submitted, there are 12 grievances that have emanated out of cases that are either in progress or either have been concluded, and there are 8 disputes. So clearly there would be 8 cases that are requiring hearings, and parallel to that the disputes. Just in terms of files, these are files, not necessarily files in terms of disciplinary.
Can I just ask, I mean, we haven't got copies of that. We haven't got slides of the last 3 at least. So it's very difficult to follow that and to ask questions afterwards if you've done that copies of that.
Okay, so can you find out how the department won't assist us on that one?
It only runs up to page 27, slide 27.
Yeah, but that is in between.
Is it possible, DG, for you to request somebody to organize in the meantime? Do you have... Okay, because if slides are not... you do have...
They want us to share.
I think share in the meantime, but virtually the department will realize how difficult it becomes not to provide sufficient information. It actually disrupts the meeting, but it's better than getting the information late as well. Can you share, honourable members? I know it's completely unfair, but for the sake of us getting the information. Yeah, they are arranging some copies. In the meantime, I think, proceed, ma'am.
For the nature of the backlog files, which are categorized in terms of their 5 appeal files, we've got 5 of them that are outstanding. You've got 1 grievance in relation to those departments that, in terms of files that have been handed over to the team. There are 52 grievance files that have been handed over to the team. 10 for outstanding misconduct, and in the misconduct cases that have been reported and are still under investigation, there are 33 such cases there in terms of formal files, and those that have been finalized in terms of their backlog ones, so all in all it was 114 backlog cases, which were not cases that were part and parcel of the new intervention. They were there in those particular departments, and these were over and above that were handed over to the intervention team. Now, in terms of fast tracking, the HR team has very, very clear terms of reference, and Treasury spoke to the issue in terms of their plans for the reduction of the compensation budget. clearly the action plan for the critical vacant positions have been identified for both Limpopo and the Eastern Cape. I must indicate the Eastern Cape Persa cleanup happened before the Section 100. So all this was part and parcel of what we were already doing with the Eastern Cape Education Department before the announcement of the intervention. So that was quite advanced outside the intervention. But the PERSAL, as I've indicated to you, the PERSAL project is part of the Outcome 12 project. We've also got an arrangement with Palama that Palama has to conduct training on PERSAL HR information for the officials who are responsible for maintaining the compulsory compliance information on PERSAL, because that's not happening in both provinces. So for all the senior managers in Limpopo and the Eastern Cape, we have an arrangement with Palama that they have to attend. Because in many instances, only junior staff members know what is needed on the PERSAL system, but for the managers that are appointed, they basically are not clued up in relation to what they should be managing on the PERSAL system. I have spoken to these issues in relation to Limpopo, but clearly the communication from the DG, DPSA, we have indicated that to those departments, that they've been given a time in which they needed to, it was by the end of the financial year, 31st of March, that they needed to abolish all unfunded vacancies in PERSAL, and at a date to be determined, the DG for DPSA would then put out a circular indicating those that have not been abolished by that particular date will then be centrally abolished. So they've been given an opportunity to do the cleanup, to determine which ones need to be abolished. Thereafter, between DPSA and Treasury, we will then centrally do the abolishment if they have failed to do what they were supposed to be doing. But also the participation in the provincial steering committees and the forums, those are happening in terms of the provisioning of feedback. Just for the Eastern Cape, as we've indicated, the political principals are in the process of endorsing the implementation plans, and thereafter the formal working arrangement and the logistics will be finalized. But this is separate from our own normal oversight function in relation to the personal cleanup as well as organizational functionality analysis in certain areas which the Eastern Cape had requested us to do before the intervention, so that is still happening. If you look at the provincial treasury as a case in point at the just above the yellow line, you will see that where they have cleaned the PERSAL data, you will get the vacancy rate only at 0.98%, where you found that in January it was sitting at 33.5%, because you found that there were unfunded vacancies and therefore they had a terminal date where they had to clean up. And therefore you see, which would appear to be a drastic change in relation to the data once the cleanup has taken place. Just for the purposes of the Eastern Cape Education Department, they do have an employment anomaly within their own personnel administrative measures, which creates positions called temporary teachers, and therefore you will find at the beginning of a year, you've got a vacancy rate of 10% in January, you've got 15%, you've got 21%. So where there may have been termination of temp educators for budgetary reasons, because normally when you get into the end of a financial year, which is in the last quarter, and they find that they do not have funding to pay educators, then a lot of decisions are taken with regards to whether they qualify for those particular temp educators and so forth. They also have a post-provisioning, legislated post-provisioning model, with the determination on how many posts the department qualify for are determined by a learner-educator ratio in relation to how many learners are at a particular school, and therefore management decisions are normally taken around that, whether there is a requirement for particular positions or not. And I'm highlighting those as a point of illustration, because once the personal cleanup is done, you would then start seeing a completely different picture. Also, once there is a cogent way in which the post-provisioning model is managed within an education department, you then shouldn't be getting such a deviance in relation to the number of vacancies at any point in time. We have completed the phase one, as we've indicated, and we are working directly with the education department. We're also dealing with the organizational design structure, which at this point in time, there is an emerging generic model which has been recommended by HESCOM, and it still needs to go through the political processes of the Council of Education Ministers for ratification. in terms of getting a baseline functionality structure for all education departments so that all legislative mandates are then determined by those particular education departments in all nine provinces. And clearly the personal information, it would be much more easier for us to do the reconciliation once the generic structure has been aligned to whatever may be in place in those particular departments. The areas in terms of emerging issues that have got projects, in terms of the project plan for all the departments as well as the two provinces, is around leadership and governance issues with specific projects there with reference to, well, the financial and administrative delegations issues, the management governance structures, whether they are in place, whether meetings take place, what are the decisions of those meetings, the HRD and organizational development issues around the personnel cleanup and ensuring that unfunded posts are abolished, the service delivery model, which has to be assessed and has to be redesigned if it is not responding to the mandate of that particular department, as well as the structure and also the topographical and geographical requirements that are unique to that particular province, and the service delivery model must speak to that. And clearly the information technology and knowledge management for us, it's a matter of how do we deal with the procurement, how do we deal with the security issues, the usage, the disposal of assets, and the governance around all aspects of the acquisition of ICT infrastructure as well as ICT hard and software, and what are the ones that have been decided upon in terms of supporting departmental operations. The service delivery improvement, clearly the focus is on the treasury space around supply chain management, payment and cash flow issues and cash management. And for us, the focus is how do we get key service delivery business processes to understand that all the departments are procuring services in exactly the same uniform and standardized way, that there is very, very little room for deviation in terms of the expected decision-making at the internal and the external control points. Assessing the review of the improvement plans. Now, the improvement plans are very clear. You've got to have the service charters, so you've got to have the service standards in order to know where you're not delivering on a particular service. And therefore, you're going to target in the next 3 years in your MTEF how you're going to put mechanisms in place to provide improvement in that particular area. So there's been a major focus, and DPSA has been providing the necessary support as well as the quality assurance of those improvement plans and tracking whether the identified improvement is happening or not happening. Clearly, in terms of the ethics and anti-corruption, there's a lot of work that has been done here, and assistance in terms of the risk management plans that have to be put in place, where they have been identified risks, especially with the acquisition and of very, very high capital value projects and processes within these departments. Change management. Limpopo had been identified as the pilot project for the change management toolkit in terms of looking at the readiness of change in those various departments for purposes of the modernization of the state, but also for purposes of cutting the red tape and the purposes of changing the way in which public servants delivered on their particular functions. And we are ongoing in terms of that, and that is also the project. Just in terms of the last aspect, there are challenges, as I've raised, in terms of our own DPSA capacity, in that notwithstanding the fact that we're intervening in two provinces in terms of the provisioning of support and project managing thereof, we still have to continue to provide support to other departments in terms of our normal oversight function. And in our last count, we had 161 registered departments and government components that we are legally responsible for oversight in terms of the implementation of various aspects of compliance in terms of public administration. The integrated teams to incorporating provincial officials as part of the work streams, that in many instances clearly has been very slow, and it is the ideal because you have to leave the skills behind where there had been identified gaps, and that had been slow. But the leadership as well, for Limpopo Education, there have been some challenges in terms of at administrative level. We, you know, there were changes, and therefore it starts delaying the project rollout in terms of what the intended plans were in all the areas of the identified management plan for the intervention. Thanks.
Yeah. No, thanks very much. I already recognize
Honorable Mahali, Honorable Nyagembe, were you on the list or were you just intervening in terms of the presentation? Okay, and I had Honorable Detoit and Honorable Marais in that order. So you want to also come in, you'll be loved. Can we then start Honorable Mahali? Is this working? Thank you, Chairperson, and also thanks to the presenters. My question will start with the National Treasurer. On your background about Limpopo, okay, it's Limpopo. You are talking about then HODs have thus surrendered their accounting officer function. So if they have done that, what are they doing? Because you are there, there's an administrator, they've surrendered their accounting officer functions. So what are they doing as HODs? And also my other question, which will be general to wherever administrators have been sent, is then because you've sent administrators, is it a matter, after your investigations for so many months, is it a matter of capacity? Did they employ people who were qualified? Let's say, for example, there are CFOs. Do they have the relevant qualifications? Or people who are working in supply chain, do they have the relevant qualifications? Or they just employed people without qualifications? And my other question would also be on what you're talking about, okay, this will go to the DPSA. When we talk about headcount audit and personal cleanup, during this personal cleanup, how do you make sure that data which is not correct is migrated into, you're going to migrate it into the new system? Do you think that the personal cleanup strategy is assisting now? They are only bringing data that is clean and that is correct and relevant, because they might also bring data that is not clean. And when you talk about redeployment at Free State Treasury, where you talk about redeployment out of the provincial treasury, I don't understand this sentence. Could present a redeploy to where? People are being redeployed from treasury to where? If they are and who redeployed these people? Is it yourselves at the, as you are intervening, or who redeployed them? Then we go to Limpopo again, treasury. There is where you talk about a recruitment process is underway to fill the vacant HOD position. When you went to Limpopo in December, was there no HOD in the provincial treasury? And what happened to the HOD? Because if there were if there are problems in the treasury department, it means the HOD was the responsible person at that time. And if you are now telling us about filling a vacant position of the HOD, what happened to this HOD? And when you are saying and other critical positions in the provincial treasury, meaning that the treasury was functioning without people in those critical positions, or what happened to them? And in Gauteng with the health department, my question would be around the issue of you were talking about hiring staff, whether these people are hiring health professionals, because as we talk now, we do have problems with health professionals, which we are saying they are not enough, or whether they were just hiring administration staff. And also, could you please also explain on the Limpopo Provincial Treasury again, where you're talking about this bullet number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Going forward, the payment intervals of the province will be aligned to receipts from national government in order to avoid future liquidity problems. If you could please explain that. That is all for now on National Treasury. And then when we come to the GPSA again, the presentation that you gave us before this one, you were talking about the issue of ICT infrastructure appears to be outdated. What is the role of CETA here? Because I haven't heard you saying anything about CETA when you talk about the ICT infrastructure. And also when you talk about this project capacity, where you talk about skills, we've been having Palamo for some time now. What's happening if we're still talking about project capacity, as if we're talking about new things and nothing's happening? What is the role of Palama? Because Palama is there. And thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Honorable Mhali. Honorable Nyakem.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me join Honorable Mhali in welcoming the presentations from both National Treasury and DPSA. The National Treasury. Your intervention in these four provinces in the main is in the treasury in the provinces. You have also indicated that your focus is to make sure that treasury in the provinces is very strong. What were your analysis when you intervened? Which areas that you identified that they are critical, and do you find out that in those areas there were weaknesses? And linked to that, how long do you intend to be working with these provinces in order to make sure that a treasury is capacitated? That's one. The second one is on Gauteng. You spoke of Gauteng Shared Services Center, which has been used for procurement for all the departments in the province. But I heard you saying that your intervention and discussions with the provincial government, you are now capacitating departments to take charge of their procurement. What's going to happen with the Gauteng Shared Services Center with the personnel that is that were employed to do this procurement? Are they going to be transferred to the departments which are going to take responsibility of procurement, or what is the plan in the discussion that you have with them? The on DPSA, you always, when you come to Parliament, in fact, not necessarily talking about intervention to provinces, but in coordinating work in national departments in particular, the issue of capacity used to be the main issue that is also affecting you to discharge your responsibilities. How affected are you now? Because when you deal with national departments and provincial departments as the public service and administration is not the same as being intervening, assisting in the administration of more than one department in the province. How have you been affected? How then do you intend to make sure that both your mandate is fulfilled, even this one of the intervention is your mandate, because you must be there at the same time. How do you deal with that? What plans do you put in place for future? What if all other provinces that were not identified now as having problems, if then there are others, how are you going to deal with that? So as the Board of Resilience, what backup mechanisms do you have in such circumstances if they happen? The last point on Chair is I think, Chair, you in your remarks you raised a very key point to say that these presentations today is for us as government has intervened using the Constitution, but now we're getting a brief of what is the status quo now. And then as the committee, we will have to go down there and do oversight work. I think I like that part, that point that you raised, Chair. I think to both DBSA and National Treasury, how was the reception when you went there? I mean, both from politicians and the administration at the same time. How was the reception? How is it now? Was it good? Because sometimes it might be good when you started bad in the process, or when you started bad and become good in the process. Any of the situations, how did you manage that? Thank you, sir.
Okay, before I proceed to Honorable Du Toit, maybe the question that Honorable Nyakembe has raised of the Shared Services Center, you know, because that was a trend that was taking place, particularly in many provinces where they start to bring together services. I would like both from DPSA maybe and public service to share with us, is it working really, the shared services? What are the major weaknesses that we have found? I know that there is a decentralization in Gauteng as per the presentation today, but just to have a learning practice, do we see them being very efficient? If not, can we then find out in terms of, you know, what are the major weaknesses on the shared services? I definitely have I don't really know whether they work well. I suspect, you know, to centralize something when somebody is administrating a process somewhere, working on something, but somebody has to pay someone. I don't really think it can, thinking about it from outside, I believe it's going to be complicated for departments that have to render some services, you know, because they don't have, people who pay don't have a feel and a touch of what is happening. You know, I would like to be clarified on that one. And then let me proceed. Honorable Du Toit, you're next.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me just start to say that thank you very much for a good presentation. I think these documents will go down as a landmark in analysis of what's the problem. I think also that most of us here that's been in Parliament or in other public service are not surprised to what we see here, because we have a clear idea of what is wrong in the public service. So I am not surprised, and I think that you've done a good job on your analysis of the problem. I think one of the most profound slides here is unquestionably number 27 and 31. Number 27 is the one with the vacancy rates after the cleanup. Now that, if you look at those February 2012
and March 2012 figures, it shows that in certain cases, especially Limpopo Roads and Transport and Provincial Treasury, that is a problem that need attention probably all over South Africa, not only here. We can't have a job sitting there that will look like job reservation, and really there's no need for that job. Now that brings me to the next step, and that is, in general, we know where this problem is. In general, then, how do we know that the fault post matches service delivery requirements and the skills of the person in that job? That's the most profound thing that I can think of. The other slide that we should take note of is number 31. It says that the integrated teams to incorporating provincial officials as part of the work streams is very slow and create major challenges towards, and this is the key point, towards sustainability beyond this intervention. And that is, you are absolutely right, this is the problem. This is a challenge. So these, for me, are the two most important slides, and it does point out the problems. Now, the other thing addressing this problem is the statement was made that the juniors can work on a parcel, but the managers not. Now, the question we have to ask ourselves is, how can you manage if you don't know what your juniors are doing? And the question is, how did this situation develop? You know, that's the problem, because if this developed, we need to avoid it. The other question that comes to mind is the capturing of the personal information and the discipline investigation skills. Now, we've had a run-in with some of the other departments on this issue. But the point is, do we have enough people who have the skills to do it? I'm talking about the investigation and discipline. And then, obviously, how long will it take? You remember, Chairperson, we had this problem with many days the other day. We had a discussion with the commission. Now, I think by myself, and maybe you could make a overall take an overall view on it, is how did we get into this mess, and how are we going to prevent it in future? I know what is in here. It really gives us the core of it, but we have to think about our manpower situation and our skills, the levels of skills. I mean, the point was raised by the other member that if we pull out from the very best, the top of our public service, which is sitting here, and who's done this intervention, and we are bleeding them white in their own departments, how wide can we fix this problem in the public service in general, all over the place? So that is a real problem. Now, coming to budgets, I've been involved with quite large budgets for many years in municipalities and so forth, and the Treasury will appreciate if I say that the budget is only as good as how accurate it is. You can overstate your need, and you underspend or overspend doesn't really tell you anything, does it? Because if people are overspending, is it because they did a bad budget, they didn't budget enough, or did they budget too much and they're now underspending? So this is a real, real problem in finance. How do we match the budget to the need, and who will verify that? And do we have the people to do that? Then, there's just, I'm almost finished. On Limpopo, there was statement made that to fill the vacant HOD positions. I was just thinking, why was it not filled, and now where does the skills now suddenly come from? I mean, it boggles my mind that you have here a position that's now being filled. So we must take the point that this position is not a redundant or not an unnecessary position that was cleaned out. So now suddenly we have people to fill it, but it was not filled. question comes to mind. Did somebody block it specifically to reserve a job for somebody? I don't know. Then it is true what you said, sir, that mundane interventions can fix problems. We only need the people to identify that and then have the will to do it. Thank you for that comment. And on Gauteng, the contracts, the 2.1 billion savings on the contracts, we now say, okay, do we have in the department sufficient skills to do this management now? If so, why now and not before on the contracts? So the quote here is contract management practices. I mean, is that a euphemism for corruption? I just want to make sure, because it seems like it, because if you now have the skills within the department to do it, why did you have to fork it out to contractors? See? All right. So the final question is, what are the root causes of these problems? I see right through it there's a failure to manage. We have to ask what the reasons are. You have to ask ourselves, why did it take so long to intervene? And then, what are the root causes of this problem? Thank you.
Yeah, and lastly, Honorable Murray.
Thank you very much, Chair. First of all, my compliments to the National Treasury. That's the way that we have get to know them over many years. Very competent, very efficient, very professional. So thank you very much for that. I think the very important thing is that one must get, all these are reactive interventions and activities. Even the report by the DPSA boils down to reactive actions and plans and not proactive. Because one must ask yourself the question, why did it occur? Who has identified it? Why is nobody identified? Why has it escalated to such a level that it was needed for cabinet to make a decision to put Limpopo under administration and the other provinces their departments. So you know, there's a huge problem, which is also mentioned in the National Development Plan. Skills, capacity, all those problems. So we have talked about this in portfolio committees. But this is a confirmation of that. I shiver to think what will happen if there's a single public service. If we can't even properly, on a proactive way, manage provinces and national departments, I shiver to think what will happen and how late we will pick up those problems. The one thing that I want to ask the National Treasury, and it boils down to specifically the Free State, I have heard that for instance, the Free State Department of Sports and Recreation spend their whole budget within the next first 2 or 3 months. So if that happens, then you can expect overspending. And it again boils down to the competency and the capacity of staff within those provinces. Now, it is not your task to train them and to educate them. My finger points back to the DPSA, to the DG. And we've asked the question about Palama. You know my phrase that I've used. And this is a confirmation. Clearly, the managers that my colleague has mentioned didn't know what they didn't know. So they didn't ask Palama to give them the training. So that's why it is totally inadequate to ask of Palama in the current structure that they've got, why didn't they give the training? Because the whole systemic issue is a problem of depending on the Palama, depending on the customer to identify what they want to be trained of. If there was criteria for managers, you wouldn't have a situation that they didn't know what the junior staff already knew. I mean, it's just ludicrous. How can you control and manage? if you know less than the people that you're supposed to control and manage. So there's a huge systemic problem. Another question to the Treasury is, did you try to ascertain payments within 30 days? And what was your statistics in that regard? Because that is the President and the Minister of Finance are on record where they say national and provincial departments will pay within 30 days. And if I've picked up in the papers, if that was correctly reported, part of the problems in the Free State is because this was not paid within 30 days, and that's why the contractors stopped working. So what is the truth in that regard? And then did you have mentioned little about corruption, and it maybe links to what my colleague has spoken to, you know, corruption. If a budget shows underspent or overspent, how much of that was due to corruption? Because I think Limpopo has been identified as one of the provinces with the highest rate of corruption, but is one of the poorest provinces in the country. So surely there's issues and problems. And then one must ask the question to Department of Public Service and Administration. How many of the premiers, HODs, and senior staff was held accountable for these problems that occurred? How many? And how many disciplinary actions was instituted? And what was the outcome of that? Someone is to blame for this, that was supposed to have the knowledge and the skills to manage, because they were appointed in positions where it is there's accountability in terms of the law. What has been done? Or are they just promoted to another post? Please, I mean, that is critical, because if we are going to identify the issues, but the premiers and the HODs and everybody is still in their positions, you can expect what has happened to just proceed afterwards after Treasury has left. Then it helps zero. Then it's fainting over the problems. So financial management is clearly the biggest issue. And my question in the past was, if Palama is not identifying criteria, then DG Palama doesn't give us the solutions that this country needs. And if you want to pursue single public service, my goodness, you can have major problems if you can't even properly manage this. Thank you, Chairperson.
Yeah, Honorable Manana, you were last, no?
Yeah, thank you very much, Chair. Well, Chair, for me, this is rather a progress report depicting the work that the intervention team has done, but as well saying it's still ongoing. But, Chair, of course, my colleagues have touched on a number of issues that are a major concern to us as a committee, and to a large extent, I think, to the people of South Africa. But, you see, Chair, we may emphasize, and I think we have across the board, and I speak here as a member of Parliament deployed by the ANC, I think we have emphasized and overemphasized the issue of skills, of capacity. But the problem over and above skills and capacity that we require in our systems is attitude, change of attitude. Because the reality is, well, I hear Honorable Murray saying we have failed to manage provinces and national departments. I think it's an incorrect way of putting it. We have people who are not committed to serve, and those are the people we must seek to root out from our systems. You see, I think this process really has clarified, you know, many skeptics, but as well has brought some level of confidence to the people of South Africa that the ANC-led political center, of course in this case the National Cabinet, has been able to identify the problem and act on the problem. But, Chair, it should not stop there. Of course, those who are found wanting, those who are found on the wrong, must be prosecuted, must face the full brunt of the law. And I think all of us agree. So that these are lessons to other provinces, to other departments, that if you are not committed to serve, leave the public service so that those who have the will and the conviction to serve our people can be better placed to pursue this work. But I think, Chair, at the center of these problems, of course, they may not have mentioned it, you know, loudly, but I think it's corruption. And if you listen, if you go through the presentation, you get a sense that this overspending, this underspending, it's maladministration. It's related to corruption, and that is what we've got to root out. We have not said, and I think the intervention team as well understands very well that at the center of all these problems is the inability to manage monies from the public purse. Now, how do we go about in fixing these problems? So we are sitting with a problem, and I think the attitude from all of us, be it the intervention team, be it ourselves as members of parliament to hold the executive to account, be it the people of Limpopo and the administration and the political leadership in the provinces, they've got to understand that this kind of intervention really is in their best interest, but as well in the interest of the poor, in the interest of those that these monies are meant to service. So I think if we can all of us change our attitudes at political leadership level, at administrative leadership level, so that indeed we rise to the expectation of our people and serve our people with diligence and with commitment in ensuring that we better the lives of our people. So we welcome, we thank the intervention team for the progress that they have made. We know that much more work still needs to be done. And it doesn't even end here. And we cannot guarantee, Chair, that these problems will not resurface next year. But we've got to, you know, we've got to draw lessons. And those where in this intervention has been, you know, imposed to have got to appreciate and draw lessons, and other departments have got to learn that indeed we've got to spend money very well. We've got to take public service quite seriously. So I think this progress is an indictment that indeed the national government, which has been criticized over a very long time for their failure to deal with corruption, I think they rose to the expectation and they were able to make the necessary interventions, which we hope will lead to positive results. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, honourable members, thank you very much. You know, for those questions and the interrogation of the report, while there is this major and serious discussion on this matter, I just need to emphasise my area was that it is important for us to understand what was the cause of the collapse. You know, because it helps us even in future, in the coming time, that we are able to sort of either avoid or see now the collapse is coming and learn from this the experience. How then do we avoid this kind of collapse? So what do we do then? But it's important just to have an understanding of the general, you know, process or situation that led to a collapse. We have discussed as this committee, you know, because we have made an analysis of all issues that come to Parliament in various committees, and we've drawn out what are the issues that constitute corruption in terms of the presentation. And we have identified 32 areas that are common, you know, they, where we actually pick up corruption, because most of the time there will be corruption practices, which is part of our major concern, and it's one area we want to zoom into it as the committees of parliament and look into those areas. Among them, there's one area of the procurement system, and would like to just get an understanding in this case around procurement, what were the findings, what are the measures. I think was a part of it is already on our table, that corruption, it's also constituted within the corruption systems and so on and so on. So I just need to get also a picture around the corruption practices. There are provinces that are not implicated in this instance. For instance, you know, we've counted the ones that we've presented. It's five of them. Those that were not implicated, do we think they don't have these problems completely? What is our opinion around those? Do we think they're intact now? They've got good governance, you know, moving forward. They won't actually give us problems, or do we have pointers that might be avoided in advance so that they don't also become like this? Okay, we talked about the issue of shared services. I think I did emphasize that. I also, I would just need to get a response. You know, because even in the national departments, you know, there would be some instances where people complain that they did not deliver because of the Treasury could not agree with them on this and that, or Treasury delayed on this and that. And therefore, those are some of the things we'd like to revisit. What we know is that we do pass budget votes nationally, but also maybe there are also intergovernmental processes that take place. And of course, the issue of, you know, complaint around Treasury is starting to sort of go up and up. I'm just looking at it from the side of provinces, based on the issues that we're discussing. Shared services, do they really work? If not, what are the main areas? And then the other area here, it's that, you know, there are cases where there's gross negligence, you know, and gross violation, you know, Treasury or PFMA and so on. I know that there are cases from DPSA's presentation that were highlighted. You know, we would be interested in that one, you know, as a part of following it up, you know, as part of the issues of seeing how country be able to root out corruption, you know, like Honorable Maonana just identified. The last one, before I just do my comment and allow a break before you respond, the last one here, is that, you know, we talked about health, particularly in Gauteng, the health services, and I'm glad that there is an indication that the laboratories are being paid. You know, I would really love to see that, because I know it's a major problem in Gauteng, this large laboratories. There are other issues that will follow up as the committee, you know, those might not fall within this, but you have noticed as well that government, state-owned entities, that laboratories that are owned by government are very expensive as compared to the Lancet and all. What costs that and how can we avoid? I know we might not be able to deal with it now, but I know it's part of impacting into why now Gauteng has this huge debt on this area, because if we're improving the health system and we have those problems, it's not really taking us forward. But I am really confident that we're doing well on health. But the issue of the laboratories, you know, if there's progress there, I really want to be assured. I heard from your presentation, it gives me a bit of comfort, but would really want to interrogate it further to see if, you know, for sure it's happening. One thing that I've also noticed is that, you know, Gauteng's management, like you said, if there is no proper management in the health system, it might not help us. We have noticed that there is good management on major areas, on other areas, in terms of hospitals. With an example of Steve Biko, if one might meet, because I do go there. Very efficient management, you know, good progress, good health service that you get. You know, you find so much improvement, which is quite excellent, and we really appreciate it. But now, you'd find that because they're so efficient, many people from Mpumalanga comes to Gauteng. Many. How do we deal with that in terms of intergovernmental? Surely I have noticed that there are no there might be a lot of vacancies for doctors in Mpumalanga. Then it saves the money. Then they appear as if they are not really in debt like Gauteng. But then Gauteng is efficient, it's working. Then we find that they incur this huge debt. Is there a process that is worked along that? Because surely it's one area that leads us to attend, because we might end up collapsing a very good, efficient system that is really doing so well in Gauteng now. And which we must be quite clear and be happy when things are happening. Things are really starting to happen in the health system. And we need to support that area in order for us to get it right. Okay. When we had all these issues, part of what we're trying to do is an assessment. We interrogate and try to assess whether we've got a capable state, you know? And if not, what are the things that we can do in order to impact, to assist that it becomes a capable state so that we know that the state is intact? That's part of what we're doing. It's not part of just we love this thing oversight. It's part of actually assisting, you know, and reinforcing where we think things are not happening. That is why then we've got this institution to make sure that it takes care of that area. It calls government like we're doing in order to interrogate and see if things are happening. We do have to strengthen our government systems big time. That is the sole reason for this. Of course, Honorable Manana talks about the interest of, you know, of people who are working for our government. Most of the time, now the impact of government, you hear people saying a lot of negative things. You'll find that it's solely because of the rotten potatoes that are there, which have to be rooted out and have people who are really interested in seeing the government doing well. It is true. I think we should be interested in seeing how best we root out the corruption, people who don't want to work. And part of this process is possibly to drive us to see, do we have drivers of transformation in government? Do we have committed people? Do we have people who believe in this government, in the objectives that we have set ourselves? Because once we have people like that, they will deliver to the poor people of this country, and, you know, we'll stop to lament, but would have at least value for money, because the interest of us as members of parliament, this committee in particular, is to see if we get value for money as well. Those issues that we interrogate, we ask those questions for the interest of making sure that there's efficiency. I would really want to give a comfort break of 10 minutes. If we're back here at 12 o'clock exactly, 15 minutes now, so that we get the responses. We've got 30 minutes to respond, 15 minutes each, and then we can be able to see if we are able to call again another session or leave it as is. Thank you very much.
What's your take on this?